KALW.
When I talk to people, when I hear on the streets, people want change.
Candidates running for mayor of San Francisco are ramping up their campaigns.
They really want change of leadership. This is not a deficit of resources in our city. It really is a deficit of management and leadership.
Today, we hear from District 11 Supervisor Asha Safai. Then comedian Eric Newton leaves his cushy tech job to perform in a burlesque parody of Star Wars.
After the first show I did, people were chanting my name at the end of the show, and I was like, I think this is what I was meant to do in life, and I quit the Disney job the next day.
And we'll hear a reading from Fairfax author Summer Schaefer.
It's a collection of 17 short stories about 17 different women, each faced with a fantastical challenge.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Our friends at KALW's show State of the Bay are having one-on-one conversations with San Francisco mayoral candidates, and we'll be hearing parts of those conversations on this show. Today, District 11 Supervisor Asha Safai. Safai immigrated to the U.S. from Iran at the age of 5. He earned a master's degree in city planning from MIT and then worked in San Francisco under Mayors Willie Brown and Gavin Newsom. He's also represented labor groups, including janitors, and he's been District 11 supervisor since 2016. Here he is in conversation with State of the Bay host Gray Swan.
The electorate seems pretty unhappy with the current governance of San Francisco, and you've been on the Board of Supervisors since 2016. How is it that you're part of the solution?
You know, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that we are a strong mayor city. We have the strongest mayor city in the entire United States. Mayor has the power to hire and fire department heads, has the power to appoint majority of every single commission, and most importantly, has the power to make the final decision on spending. So that's not to absolve me as a member of the board. We have the power to pass laws. We have the power to inquire. We have the power to push and try to start new initiatives. But at the end of the day, final authority really rests with this mayor. And I think when I talk to people, when I hear on the streets, people want change. They really want change of leadership. This is not a deficit of resources in our city. It really is a deficit of management and leadership. And we can get into that. We can talk about the areas of public safety. We can talk about the areas of extreme homelessness. And we can talk about the areas of corruption. And I think at the end of the day, all of that comes back to a strong mayor city and some of the failures of this mayor.
You and Mayor London Breed maybe are not on speaking terms, or maybe she's not talking to you. Is that accurate? And how is it impacting your ability to do your work as a supervisor?
I mean, listen, I work with Mayor Willie Brown. I work with Mayor Gavin Newsom, Ed Lee. There was a consistent flow of communication, even if you didn't disagree. You know, at one point, I think about a year and a half ago, the mayor said, we're no longer going to have our monthly meeting. So that stopped. I think there's probably a majority of the board that she doesn't engage and work with. So how can you be effective as mayor if a good part of your job you're not doing? And that's communicating with the legislative body.
You have a lot of great ideas on your campaign stuff, but you backed Prop B in the March election, and that was around minimum police staffing levels. It didn't pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is your plan for improving police staffing levels, or do you think that they're fine?
We passed legislation unanimously. And again, mayor chose not to sign it, but say this is something that could work, but maybe because it's my idea, she didn't want to support it. But we passed legislation to say we will have proactive community policing. Every single police station in the city will have proactive community policing. That includes getting officers out of their car and doing real foot patrols, bike patrols. We know that when officers are present in the community and interacting and know their community, crime goes down dramatically. So that is a big centerpiece of my public safety plan, is fully implementing our community policing strategy, foot and bike patrols in community.
going downtown, I often joke that the safest place in San Francisco has got to be the Apple Store at Union Square. Right. I mean, there's a massive police presence downtown. But if you go to a district like in the Richmond, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that that is a huge district. And if you talk to Chris Canning, who is the police chief there, he's like, we're really short-staffed. So tell me about allocating resources. Does retail, I know you're concerned about retail theft, but does the Apple Store merit a mobile command center when there are residents in the city who are aching to have police officers just patrol on foot?
So just to clarify what that is, what you're seeing in Union Square and the Apple Store and some of the other retail establishments, it's the 10B program. What they do is those stores themselves pay for off-duty officers to come in and work in uniform. And we allow that. We allow that. It's called the 10B program. Actually, what I did about 2 years ago is for the first time in the city's history, I passed what was called the 10A legislation, which allowed private entities to hire sheriffs off-duty in uniform. And that is something that's happening. It's part of my plan to get more police presence out there. So I know when people see that, they think the city's allocating resources to protect the Apple Store, but it's not. Actually, Apple's paying for that time. But then you can, to your point, that's why we did the community policing proactive foot patrol legislation. We want officers on the foot beat in the Richmond, in the Sunset, in the Excelsior, in the Bayview. And the way that they fill those now, because I walk the beat with the captain of the Tenderloin 2 weeks ago, every single police station is allocated an overtime budget. So even though we're short officers now, we have the money to pay for officers to come in. It's not a long-term solution because we need to properly staff, but they do have the resources to bring the officers in. It's still voluntary, but that's where a good captain, that's where good leadership from the top, where you're proactively saying, we need people to come fill these slots because we want to see proactive officers on the beat doing that job. And I think the more we get that, the more people feel safe, the more they know the community. So some of that, there's a blend of that in Union Square. There's officers off duty getting paid, but there's also foot patrol officers that are being allocated there. And we need more of that citywide. And that's what I want to do as mayor.
But just to finish that point, I mean, if an officer is doing a 10B program down in Union Square, which is great that Apple's paying for it, I mean, that's an officer who's not going to be doing overtime necessarily in his or her own district.
Right. Or in another part of the city.
I want to get to this email from Dwayne. He writes, I'm a San Francisco native and a retired San Francisco lieutenant who's lived in many districts of the city, or fire lieutenant. I currently live in District 11, and I feel the outlying districts are forgotten, taken for granted, with all the attention directed at the downtown hot zones because they get more attention. What have you, Supervisor Safai, specifically done for District 11 that would make you a standout as compared to a supervisor who would use a district as a stepping stone?
So I agree with you. In fact, that was the mantra of our campaign, no longer the forgotten part of San Francisco, when I ran in 2016. We've been able to marshal over $1 billion worth of investment into our district. We have put more traffic calming speed humps all over the district. We've planted over 3,000 trees just in District 11. When I came in, no housing had been built in 50 to 60 years. We built almost 600 units of housing, 65% of that affordable, and a new category of affordable for working families, teachers, nurses, firefighters. We've done over every single basketball and playing court at our playing fields. We've also gotten additional resources for family and child care centers. So we have been able to do a significant amount that had not been done. I still agree there's more work to do with the caller. One of the things, and going back to the public safety, since this is a fire,
Fire lieutenant.
The other thing that we did in terms of quality of life, and this is something that was unique to District 11, we created a community safety quality of life liaison. It's actually housed within the police department. It's part of my plan for citywide. It's housed within the police department, but it's dedicated 100% to District 11. So they're interacting with the merchants. They're interacting with residents. They're doing all of the, whether it becomes an encampment, whether it becomes trash, whether it becomes graffiti, whether it becomes an issue of robberies happening. They're the main person that's interfacing with the police department and all of the different agencies. That's a model that we want to bring citywide, and it's also part of my safety plan, something that we rolled out. The last thing we did was we were able to create a community benefits district. Not every district in the city, not every commercial corridor in the city has that. It's where the at a defined area on the commercial corridor, you put the resources together and you pool those resources to promote, attract, and enhance the commercial corridor.
That was San Francisco mayoral candidate Asha Safai speaking with State of the Bay host Grace Wan. Next week, we'll hear from District 2 candidate Aaron Peskin. And you can catch State of the Bay on KALW tonight at 6 p.m. for more conversations with local leaders, artists, and authors. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. While he was working in tech for big companies like Disney and Sony, Eric Newton longed to be an entertainer. The stars aligned for the Oakland-based comedian when he was hired to be host of The Empire Strips Back. It's a burlesque parody of Star Wars. Eric left his job 2 years ago for that gig, and he's been touring North America ever since. The Empire Strips Back opens in San Francisco this week for their summer run. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Eric Newton.
Eric, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You've worked for entertainment giants like Disney, Sony, and Fox, and you worked in tech. How in the world did you end up becoming the host of The Empire Strips Back?
Yeah, originally I was working at a tech job. I was doing quality assurance as a tester on streaming apps at the time, but I was also doing stand-up comedy. I've been doing stand-up for like 4 or 5, maybe 6 years even, off and on. And anyway, I did a really small gig in San Rafael at a Chinese food restaurant. But the day of the show, it was really cool. We got to San Rafael, we parked, and there was a theater. It happened to be showing the movie, The Empire Strikes Back, right? And I was like, that's pretty cool. I love that movie. I took a picture of the marquee, and I do the show. Anyway, at the show, I had a friend there. Her name is Natalie Fauzi, and she worked at the Great Star Theater at the time. She's like, hey, a show is coming in called The Empire Strips Back. They say they're looking for a new host. They want to bring on like a local comedian. You want me to put your name in as a possible, you know, they can audition you. And that's how it started. I got the audition. They loved me. They didn't look at anybody else, and they picked me for as the host. And I've been the host ever since. That was like 2 years ago.
And you were working in tech at the time, and you left your job to do this.
I did, yeah. It was a big risk too, because I was working for Disney on Disney Plus, and I had like benefits, and it was a cushy job. And I was like, I thought hosting the show Empire Strips Back, I thought it was only gonna last for 2 months in San Francisco only. But after the first show I did, people were chanting my name at the end of the show, and I was like, this is what I was meant to do in life. And I quit the Disney job the next day, and now I've been doing this full time ever since.
And had you always wanted to go into comedy?
Yeah, I did actually. I never knew how I would get there, but you know, all through growing up, my favorite things in life have always been like sitcoms and cartoons and joking around. This is always my personality. And later, and finally, you know, in life, I was like, man, what do I really want to do for me? I was like, what would make me happy as also a career path? And I picked comedy. And, you know, I have ideas for other things I want to do, too. I've always been kind of good on stage. I was also a musician. I used to play drums and rap. And so I'm always comfortable on stage.
So you do a lot of shows a week, and you're on the road all the time, practically. And I saw in your background, your travel buddy, Sterling the cat.
Oh, yeah. So Sterling, her name's Sterling. She's I get to bring her on tour with me, which is one of another thing I'm so grateful for in life. You know, I want to say at least 5 cities. I took her to Canada. She's great.
You seem like the perfect person for this job. So you perform as Lando. And in the Star Wars franchise, Lando is an acquaintance of Han Solo, and he's a smuggler.
So technically, actually, I play Lando's nephew.
Lando's nephew. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so when the show starts, they do introduce me as Lando Calrissian, and I do a little bit where I correct them. Like, oh, guess what? I'm actually not Lando. I'm Lando's nephew. And so, to be honest, I'm not really an actor. I don't even know if I could really act. So I'm happy that on stage I get to play like a persona of myself. And so the jokes always feel real and authentic. And I get to talk to the crowd as myself.
So the Empire Strikes Back is not affiliated with Disney. It's not affiliated with Lucasfilms. Burlesque and Star Wars.
Yeah.
Such an interesting combination. But this tour sells out. You all sell out just about every city you go to.
Yeah.
Why do you think this combination of Star Wars and burlesque works?
I think at first it starts with like the original creator and director of our show. So the show started in Australia like maybe like 12 or 15 years ago. And the original people that started the show, the original director and creator, I think, is Russell Beatties. And he's just like a brilliant guy. He understands. He does a lot of shows, like live shows like this, where it's kind of like parody stuff. Like he used to do like Game of Thrones one and all this stuff. So anyway, the original concepts and designs for the show, for instance, like the props we use and the costumes, you can tell they're made by people who really love and understood Star Wars. And then the lighting and the music is really, you can tell, like, it's very professionally. So people just, and it's kind of show business and entertainment that appeals to them. And then the burlesque side of it brings in like this really cool audience where it's a mix. For example, our audience is mostly, a vast majority is female every night, you know? And I think they come to see the dancers and then the theatrics and the spectacle of the show. And then the majority of the Star Wars fans happen to be male, you know? So they come together and it's like this, everybody gets kind of what they were looking for out of the show. And so it's a wonderful landed. It's crazy. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's hard to really describe it because you kind of have to go to the show to see how it all comes together, but it works. And that's why I think it is successful in all the markets we go to. Yeah.
That's interesting that you said mostly who attends are women. And I saw, I've seen people comment, because I've seen clips of it on YouTube, and I saw people comment that they wanted to get back into dancing again because they saw the show. The costumes and the puppets in the show are just amazing. The quality is really, really amazing. Like you said, it looks like something from the movies. The choreography is beautiful from what I've seen. The show is funny too as well. Are people usually surprised by the quality of the show after they've seen it?
Yes. A lot of times we'll come and look. We didn't know what to expect and we're just blown away. Like, you know, I hear that comment all the time. So it's wonderful. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Has anybody from Star Wars, like, that you know of ever come?
When we're doing the LA run, we had a media night, and I didn't get to meet any of these people, but there were so many directors from different Star Wars. So for example, I did this joke about the Book of Boba Fett, and the directors of the Book of Boba Fett were there that night. And actually, okay, so when we were doing the run originally in San Francisco, like I said, I used to work at Disney, so I had a lot of friends from Disney that knew people from Lucasfilm, and they all came to the show several times. So people affiliated with Disney and Lucasfilm have come to the show, and they usually always said they love it. You know, that no one's trying to tear us down. Like that, they all seem to approve of what we're doing, even though we're completely unlicensed.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, but that's still pretty amazing. Yeah, because you all have been doing this for a while, so the fact that you're still doing it. You posted on Instagram several times that you have the best gig in the galaxy.
Yes.
Why?
Oh, wow. For so many reasons. I love the people I work with. I mean, my favorite thing about the show for me, seriously, is like we do these 8 shows a week, almost sold out every night. And just to see how happy people are when they're leaving the show every single time I got a shot, I was always like, am I even good? You know, I always doubted myself. I was like, something in me knew that I could do it. Right? So I was like, so when you put me in the right place at the right time, I know I could do this. And I always was like, but how do I get there? I had no idea. But now it's like validation. It's like, no, dude, you know, you're still here. You performed as some like celebrities on thousands of stages. And, you know, you told the jokes that you wanted to tell. No one bought them for it. Hey, and not that I got to perform my art honestly and people reacted to it. And it kind of is so validating to be like, no, I was right. Like, I can do this. And it is crazy to have dreamed about something and then it becomes reality, right? I want everybody to be able to feel that feeling in life at least one time because it's like the best.
That was comedian Eric Newton speaking with KELW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. The Empire Strips Back begins their summer run May 22nd at the Great Star Theater in San Francisco. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next, we'll hear an episode from our podcast, New Arrivals. Fairfax author Summer Schaefer reads from her new book, The Women.
It's a collection of 17 short stories about 17 different women, each faced with a fantastical challenge. Here's a section from the first story, titled My Little Pet. The nights became hours, full of passion and violence, at times cozy and warm, it purring against my chest, other times raucous and volatile, myself beholden to its rages and moods. One evening, a movie before us, a big bowl of popcorn next to us, it lazily climbed from my lap onto my head and ripped out a chunk of my hair with its teeth. The pain so startled me that I impulsively reached up and threw it as hard as I could against the patio glass door, upon which it made a surprisingly firm thump. I jumped up, overturning the bowl of popcorn that clattered against the floor, scattering popcorn, and braced myself. Instead, it lay with its back to me on the ground, and I feared I had done it this time. I couldn't breathe. The room was chaotic with silence and TV. But then it came to, turned and stared at me with dark eyes.
That was Summer Schaefer reading from The Women. New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can find more Bay Area author readings at kelw.org/newarrivals. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow morning at 11. We'll hear from the creator of the short film, The Lake Merritt Monster.
Everyone went into the movie thinking it was going to be kind of like stop motion and then they see the monster and their whole attitude changes. It all flips.
Oakland filmmaker Ben Mulholland talks about monsters and mythology tomorrow morning at 11. And here's some music from a local band.
Whoa. Hey, let me ask my man over here. Hey, man, let me ask you a question, man. See if you know what's up. Pick this. Who fuses the music with no illusions? Producing the blueprints, clueless? Automator, defy the laws of nature. Electronic monolith, throw a jam upon the disc. The futuristic loop it with the quickness. Hyper-producing, hydrogen fusion liquids. Keep your distance. Keep your distance.
Who's that?
Who's that? Who's that?
Who's that?
This is hip-hop band Deltron 3030 featuring Del the Funky Homo Sapien from Oakland and Dan the Automator from San Francisco. They're part of this year's Portola Music Festival lineup. You can register for passes and keep an ear out on KALW for a chance to win tickets. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sarah Jesse, Lina Najia Basuni, Molly Blair Salyer, James Rowlands, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Johanna Miyaki, Mary Catherine O'Connor, Shireen Adil, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. All in the mix. Nuclear physicist, genetically tailored every bit of this stimulus.